Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Right, we're recording.
Recording, everybody. Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to Two Black Girls, One Rose.
Where together we'll uncover what we can learn about modern dating, love, and relationships from popular television. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Justine.
And Sex in the City pilot is yes. Our kickoff. My first thought, I feel like Sarah Jessica Parker has never looked worse than this pilot episode.
Oh, this makeup. It looks like she did it, slept in it, and then went to set.
And then went to set. The wardrobe budget was like $50. Like,
yeah, yeah.
Especially what they had her in specifically.
Yeah, I did a little IMDb digging on the stylist. Okay. I was like, this ain't Patty.
This ain't Patty. No way. Because they really step it up after this. Mm-hmm, my goodness. Mm-hmm. But anyways, in all seriousness, thoroughly enjoyed rewatching this first episode. Have not seen this in decades.
Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. Decades.
So a long time. Even now when I watch it like randomly, I always jump to like season 3 or 4 or like somewhere in. I never even touched season 1. So I'm excited to just kick off right at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Friend, what are your initial thoughts of this episode?
This episode. Oh my God. Women are having the same problem they've always had. This is crazy.
I know. God help us.
Oh my God. Yeah. I think the problem is that men are being decentered. And I never realized how long it's been since men have been decentered. Even this being a show about 4 women on the go in New York City, and like one of them has aspirations of housewifery, but even that, she was still working at the art gallery.
Yeah, true.
I think even having this show was in a way decentering men from the conversation. Yeah. Even though this show was on at the same time as Sopranos and all that. It was still the men are the side characters, the men are the side acts.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That's a problem for a lot of people.
Yeah. And that's what made this show so groundbreaking. I mean, because it was these 4 women and their adventures, and that's that.
Mm-hmm. I, though, would have loved to see, and I wish they did this then, because I can't do it now, a Sex in the City LA, a Sex in the City Chicago.
Oh, different cities.
A Sex in the City Miami, because New York City is such a money town. It's such an ambitious town.
Yeah.
That it would have been really nice to see through a satirical half-hour comedy, like, those different types of women in large cities dating.
Yeah.
I would have liked that.
That would have been cool. Yeah, because New York is a very particular place. It kind of is. I think some of what they go through in the show, you can maybe paint to other cities, like just large cities, big city dating. But as you said, New York is a very hustler. The women are hustling. The men are hustling, like kind of town. So, yeah, that's interesting.
And while the beauty was not exactly iconic in this episode.
No.
At all.
Nor the fashion.
Nor the fashion, definitely not. I didn't even have no notes on that girl. It is still, it's still like made statements. I think it's so interesting that Samantha had the longest hair.
She did. She looked the best, I would say, in this episode.
Yeah, she did. She did. Well, she's also the oldest, and she also like owned her own business, and like, she always had her back straight. You know what I'm saying? Like she was always, but even her having the longest hair to me said, okay, she deals the most with men because men love long hair. You know what I mean? Miranda having this absolutely god-awful, terrible red pixie cut. Awful.
Yeah,
said to me, like, I go to Supercuts because I don't even have time to create a relationship with a hairdresser. Like, I don't even have time for it. I just go to Supercuts and, like, keep it moving. Carrie had this short, curly bob that was so malnourished, right?
So frizzy, too.
It was so frizzy, God, but it was the argan oil.
It was cute. Something.
It was a cute cut, though. I thought it was a cute little bob, but it was just said, like, there's no curly hair products out in the world, right? Even for white women, right? And then Charlotte had this flipped up 90s bob looking like Molly, what's her face? Ringwald. She looked like a teenager, right? Which just said that she had the most immature level of like dreaming and ambition. She has the least.
That's interesting.
Because she still wants to be young.
Right.
So even the hair always tells a story, but I thought for this first episode, for the beauty, I was like, okay, these are at least the hair is saying something about the characters.
Right. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, that was it. What about you?
I loved watching this episode because I totally forgot how Carrie and Big met.
Oh my God, me too.
I like didn't remember that at all. Yep. And to your point, Sex and the City in general, you know, we love it because it decenters the men. It's, you know, about the women and their adventures. But the one gripe we have is with Big. Big and Carrie's... Many, but if
with the men you're talking about specifically?
Yes, if there's any men who slowly wiggles himself back into the center, it's Big. And that's, I feel like, where a lot of our frustrations are with Carrie, because we're like, we're not supposed to care about him, ma'am. Yeah. Like, do you?
Yeah.
So that, you know, there's more to come there, we know. But it was cool to see how they met. And I love this episode, just like the introductions to Charlotte, Samantha, and Miranda, how much they very obviously, the writers, like, leaned into these distinct archetypes. Like they made it very set in stone immediately. Here are the four characters. Pick the one you identify with the most.
Yeah.
And which is just fun. You know, you see yourself in at least one of them to start, I would think. And then my last thought was, what you were saying about New York City dating, I thought was very interesting. The characterization of like New York City dating. Or just like big city dating. And not much has changed. This is what, 25 years later? Yep. I think single women are still very frustrated by single men in the city. Single men are still running around like they own the place. And Carrie's question of why are there so many great unmarried women and not so great unmarried men? Still very much debated today at every brunch. We still talk about that same dusty brunch. Question.
Oh, no.
So I'm very excited for this conversation. I think Carrie had kind of two questions. So she had the question, why are so many great unmarried women and not so great unmarried men? She also asked, were women really giving up on love and thralling up on power? That first question, I almost want to rephrase it. I'd rather say single than unmarried. I kind of said this on Instagram a little bit.
Okay.
Because we're assuming that all women want to be married and that's not
true. Oh, I see. Yeah.
So I would just like rephrase that instead of unmarried, I'd say single. Also great women, great men. Like, what does great even mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? Yeah.
What does that even mean? So what I feel like we're really debating is the question of why are there so many single women ready and serious about a commitment and so many single men unserious and not ready for a commitment, right? That's kind of really what we're debating here.
Yes. And willing, I think, even then to waste time. We are still wondering, why are men wasting all this time?
Yeah. They don't see it as that, though, clearly.
Yeah, they see it.
They don't see their time being wasted.
It's like you're at Dave and Buster's and you're doing the shooting the basketball. That's how they see it. But dates.
Over and over. Yeah. I mean, we laugh, but at brunch, like, that's what we're talking about. Even this weekend, hanging with my girls, like, I sometimes, first of all, I sometimes find myself, I'm the only married one, or I'm, like, one of the few in a relationship. And so in that conversation, more often than not, the conversation turns towards, you know, somebody giving an update on their dating life or relationship. And we then start talking about some guy and what bullshit he's on now. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Things were going great until they weren't. Things seemed serious and we were about to head towards commitment until we weren't. And why does that keep happening to all of our fabulous single girlfriends? So yeah, I'm excited for us to discuss what this phenomenon is and why single women are feeling this disparity. And maybe we can find some hope in this, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, I think so.
I think so. Mm-hmm. All right, before we dive into the recap, though, Taylor Swift dropped an album this weekend.
That's none of my business, but you're going to tell me all about it.
Y'all, I sure as shit did not listen to this album, but I did read some reviews and think pieces, and the critics and some of the Swifties were not thrilled. So that is what made me perk up.
Really?
I was like, oh,
Oh.
So I'll tell you all about it. Some of the critique that's happening with this album.
Oh, my.
And I'm prefacing, I did not listen, so just know that. Yeah.
Take this one grain of salt. I can't even handle it. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And then also we want to discuss this LA Times article about why young people are having less sex.
Yeah.
Which I think is really interesting. Gen Z is just, they ain't knocking boots like we used to.
No. Yeah.
So we'll chat about that. If you want to hear our episode with our juicy pre-show, if you want to listen to us ad-free, make sure you join the Rose Garden over at Patreon. On Patreon, you can also watch us on video.
Girl, in 4K.
4K high definition. Shout out to our new cameras. Mm-hmm. So head to patreon.com/2blackgirls1rose to try out a Patreon membership with a 7-day free trial. And shout out to the Rose Garden. Okay. All right. Let's dive into this little recap, this quick little 25-minute episode. Oh, ooh, that was
love
nice.
It. Ooh, that was amazing. And it felt like a movie because it's so well written. Oh.
Mm-hmm. Gorgeous. It was great. So yeah, Sex and City premiered June 6,
1998.
So just like off rip. And I was curious. I looked up their ages. Sarah Jessica Parker was 33.
Oh, shit.
Kim Cattrall was 42.
What? So
they're about the age of their characters.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that was cool. But yeah, the show, for those who don't remember, it was based on writer Candace Bushnell's column, what was called Sex in the City. It was in the now defunct New York Observer, it was a newspaper, where she wrote about her personal dating adventures, that of herself and her friends in New York City, and her... I guess her genre was really just like exploring dating and mating rituals. When she first started the column, she wrote from her perspective, like first person perspective, because it was like her stories. And then she later invented this Carrie character who was introduced as one of her friends. But it was really her. And the reason she did that is because her parents were reading the column and she didn't want them to think all this was about her.
I would die. My mom doesn't even watch this. She dies at the clips.
Just anyway. The clips alone, I know. But then, interesting, I didn't realize Candace Bushnell, CB, Carrie Bradshaw.
Oh, CB. Cute. Yeah.
But yeah, her column was later compiled into a book of the same name before being turned into this fabulous TV show. For HBO by Darren Star, who was best known for creating Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place.
Yeah, that's a rich man.
That's a rich man who does a lot of female forward shows.
Yeah, lots of very white half-hour comedies.
Yes, very much. He's also openly gay, as is Michael Patrick King, who was like the main writer, director, producer, both openly gay. So yeah, just very interesting. I think that article you sent me, I think from history.com, when Sex and the City premiered, it was fresh after the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky.
Yes.
Like.
Yes. Very
scandal.
Fresh after. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the country, as a country, we were talking openly about blowjobs. We're forced into the space, whether we wanted to or not. Thank you, Bill.
Oh,
and
Monica.
Yeah, people were speaking openly about sex being a thing, you know? So that was just kind of like part of the times.
Yeah.
And then there's this interesting quote from Chris Noth, who plays Big, where he said when he first read the pilot, it was similar to when he read the pilot for Law and Order.
Yeah.
or Law and Order was like a, it was a different take on police work and like a police investigative show. And reading the pilot of Sex and the City was like a different show on like sexual politics. And how, you know, TV and the world was kind of ready for it, I guess.
Yeah, by accident. Thanks, Monica. Right. I'll have to do a little bit more research on Monica. She is. That's some lady. She changed.
That's a lady.
She changed a lot. She changed a lot of things.
I know. Her little internship at that White House really turned into something. Shit.
God. Oh, man.
So anyways, we open up the show after the iconic theme song and the little iconic credits. We have Carrie. She opens the show narrating the story of Elizabeth. A girl who moves to New York City. Mm-hmm. She immediately meets Tim, this investment banker. He's one of New York's eligible bachelors. And she says they met in typical New York fashion at a gallery opening. At an
art gallery. Wait, one more thing about Tim. Mm-hmm. They said that he was like so fly and so fabulous because he made $2 million a year. Mm-hmm. I was like, $2 million a year? What does that make you, one bedroom?
I know, that can't do much in New York right now. But shout out to Tim, I guess.
Yeah, back then, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, when they said they met at in typical New York fashion at a gallery opening, I had to roll my eyes. You know I'm about this art show life.
You are.
I love to go to a little gallery, open a little art show, a little exhibit. And I usually take our friend, our mutual friend.
Yep,
who's,
yep, yep.
You know, single girl, we out here, we're always looking side to side who's here. Ain't nobody at these art galleries. Ain't nobody at these openings. Yeah. I ain't seen nobody yet.
And you got to go to the secret ones that turn into parties later.
I guess so.
In the basement of a C-town or like whatever the fuck they're doing. Yeah.
C-town. Mm-hmm. Oh, God. But anyways, Carrie continues the story. 2 weeks, Elizabeth and Tim dated. They had great sex. They were open to each other. They go and look at townhomes together. He invited her to meet his parents. Mm. And then he called and canceled because his mom was sick. Mm-hmm. And then he disappeared for 2 weeks.
Vanished. Yeah.
And said, you know, work was busy. And then he ultimately disappeared for good.
Yeah. This is also before social media. Before social media. So you could not stalk him.
Right.
And he just, what he was doing,
was gone.
He literally could just vanish off the face of the earth.
The trauma women in the 90s were going through.
Girl.
When he ghosted you, he was gone. Poof. Yep. Gone forever. Like, Jesus.
Unless you both went to the same New York Times reviewed restaurant.
Right.
Or whatever, you know.
Went to the same gym or you lived in the neighborhood, you might see him, but... Oh my God. But yeah, just like the classic mean streets of dating.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Horrible story, but so common. We all have heard this, you know, bullshit. This guy strings you along. You think it's getting serious and then not. I'm currently supporting a friend through a devastating breakup with another man who is on some fuck shit.
I am third party, also devastated by the breakup.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God.
So this, we've all been here, or you've coached a friend through it, or you thought you found the one and then he gone.
Yep.
Horrible. So Carrie poses the ultimate question, which again, we'll discuss. Why are there so many great unmarried women, not so great married men?
Mm-hmm.
It was crazy to see her like talking to the camera.
So weird. I felt like she was in the room looking at me, giving me a lecture. I did not like it.
I'm happy they got rid of it. Yeah,
I'm
it was like
so happy they got rid of it.
It's kind
of
corny too. It's not my favorite. But yeah, Carrie, she interviews a bunch of her different friends and gets a couple people's takes on it, guys and girls. So you have this one guy who says, you know, men by their 30s have all the power.
Yep.
And women are pretty much at their whim.
Mm-hmm.
Then we meet Charlotte. Charlotte said, Charlotte really lost me from her first scene. I was like, Charlotte, girl, what?
No.
She said, men are threatened by successful women. So basically women, she's saying, keep your mouth shut and play by the rules.
Mm-hmm. Which a lot of people still say.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let the man be the man.
Our interview with Naked Beauty Planet, we talk a little bit about that, like the rules.
We did talk about that.
And the rules in the book of the rules. And her and I think Hannah Brothman, too, talk about how the rules work.
Yeah.
And they're both married to rich men.
They are. Yeah. there's something to stroking a man's ego.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So it seems. Uh-huh, but it just makes it just like I can't.
That's what I'm excited to get into with this recap podcast in particular, is that people have been coming out very disgusted by a lot of these characters and what they do and what they say. I think they're not disgusted. I think they're triggered. I think a lot of people are reacting to particularly Carrie and Charlotte in a way that is like almost violent in the way that they're talking about these characters and their decisions that they're making. But it really is because you made those decisions. Like you've done that. and that's why you're so mad at her, right? And she's supposed to be this character in this show that you're supposed to get lost in, and now you found yourself, and now you're mad.
Now you're mad at yourself is really what it is.
You're mad at your old self, which is totally fine. But that's fine. I think even Charlotte saying, like, play by the rules, I'm like, she wasn't incorrect, especially at that time.
At that time, oof. Miranda, they have Miranda and a guy kind of saying the same thing. Like, older women don't want to settle for just what's available. And then they have this whole long rant about the only short, fat, bald guys are left or some shit.
Yeah, there we go. I was like, wow. Episode one, season one. Here we go with the phobias. All right.
So then we meet Samantha Jones. And she's just singing a totally different tune for everybody. Her energy's different. She looked like a bad bitch. And she's like, y'all are bothered. And I'm very unbothered over here. And she basically advises the women to just go out and have sex like a man, without feelings. And she says, this is the first time women have had the amount of power and money as men.
As men.
Why not take advantage? Forget about the romance. Go out and get yours. This is basically what she said.
Which she's also right.
I love it. I feel like she's right to an extent because if you are someone, if you're a woman who... If you're a woman who wants to get married and have kids, that approach, that strategy is not going to work for you.
And you shouldn't feel shame around that.
And so Carrie's looking at Samantha, and that's when she asks herself, are women really like Samantha? Are they giving up on love and thralling up on power? We meet Stanford along the way.
God, Stanford.
I know.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. I don't know where he got this from. He said the only place you can still find love and romance was in the gay community.
Who wrote that?
I said, in which city? Because I've never heard that before.
That is, you know what? We're going to have to ask somebody about that because I know that's before apps. Because if there's anybody who used the apps,
That's what I'm saying.
Wow. Okay.
All the gays.
Okay.
And he said, I was like, what? Love and romance in the gay community. Maybe that was that the sentiment in the 90s? Not the sentiment now.
I need to know about this. I need to ask someone about this more. Because also, is it because they're so open sexually so that nobody's lying? You know, like, let's make it a third. Or like, let's go to like, you know, let's be open or like whatever.
He said love and romance.
He did say romance. That is not what I'm talking about.
If you have perspective, if you identify as queer and dated in the 90s, I'd be or early 2000s, I'd love to hear. Because that Stanford's point of view, I was like, what? But anyways, in that same scene, Carrie runs into Kurt Harrington. She calls him a self-centered creep and a mistake, but also the best sex she's ever had. And she, you know, kind of saddles up to him and then heads to his apartment in the middle of the day. They have unemotional, unattached sex. She's like, I'm doing my research. I'm trying to have sex like a man. And, you know, he goes down on her. She doesn't return the favor and it's like, gotta go back to work. Bye.
Gotta go.
And as she runs out of his apartment, she drops her bag on the street, and lo and behold, Big. Totally forgot about this. I didn't even think how they met. I just didn't
remember. Me either. He's in my head, he's always been there.
Same, but at some point they met, so like, I had to. And first thing she peeps is he has no wedding ring.
I still do that.
Friend. Yes, this is you all day.
I've done that since I turned, this is my 18th birthday.
I was about to say, when did you start? Because I remember this. I remember going out with you and you would notice, you're like, oh, he has no wedding ring on. Or, oh, he's, I'm like, what?
And we're like 24. So young.
And it was never in me to look. I just like never thought or just even still when I got into my later 20s, like I just it was still a thing that I just like didn't. When did that start for you? What, like, did someone teach you that? Did you go out with some older girls who were
No, I'm sure it was from, I'm trying to think really, like really think back in my head. I'm almost positive it was familial. I'm almost positive this was my mom teaching me how to do this, or maybe even church.
Oh,
it could have even been that. Because it feels like something I learned at church.
Learned, yeah. From
like the ladies.
Okay.
But yeah, I've always looked, peep that left hand, boom.
Yeah, I learned it from you. I never learned this. I never looked. I'm just like out here, and then you're like, oh yeah, he's a no ring. And I'm like, what? And then I look down. I'm like, oh shit, that's a thing I guess I should be looking for. Like
I did that at Washington Square Park when we did our photo shoot on Friday.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When you and our friend were taking pictures, I was like, boom, no ring, boom, no ring, boom, no ring. Turn around.
Oh,
turn around.
Oh my God. Hilarious. So anyways, Carrie, we see she goes out with Skipper. Skipper's her like,
oh my God, I love nice Skipper.
Guy. I love Skipper too.
He had great nourished curls. I don't know where he was getting his hair care from.
I know. We need to slide that product line over to Carrie. Her frizzy ass hair was looking nuts.
God.
But Skipper, he's the nice guy. He's the hopeless romantic. Mm-hmm. He's got, you know, all the feels.
He said something that I actually really liked and I still agree with in the very beginning when they were talking about, you know, how singleness, right? Mm-hmm. He said there's no space in New York City for romance, and I thought that was so true.
Yeah,
everybody got a roommate, everybody got an emotional like support space. Lizard, yeah. Everybody, like, it's just so bad in New York when it comes to space. I think that's why people cry on the train and they left by themselves, because you don't even have somewhere to cry at your house. You share a wall with somebody.
I know.
It's awful. It's really, it
we're all
can
on top
get
of each other.
Yeah, it can get really, it demands a lot of you. Mm-hmm. New York demands a lot out of a person.
Yeah.
And so I would space for it.
Yeah. I would say physical space, but then also like in this hustle and bustle, it's a fast moving city, right? Like it's a tough city, it's a hustle, everybody's hustling. And everybody's looking for the next, even dating is like, all right, I gotta go on the date. I gotta go. Okay, yeah. It's Thursday. I meet this girl for drinks. So like, where in that is there like a moment to just like breathe and like be romantic, you know?
Mm-hmm. And wait for something to come to you. Like,
So another problematic moment, poor Skipper was like, I have a lot of feelings. And she's like, are you sure you're not gay?
Oh my God, Carrie! What?
It's crazy to think because the writers and the main showrunner are both gay men.
Yeah,
a lot of weird like gay stuff.
Yeah,
in not a like PC kind of way. You know, it's weird. So, anyways, Carrie decides for whatever reason she's going to hook Skipper up with Miranda, which
her meanest friend.
Her meanest friend.
Why was she
cynical?
Do this?
I don't know. Just. Very pure opposites. Maybe she wants to see if opposites attract or something.
I think that's what she said. She was like, she's older, she's cynical. Maybe he'll bring something out of her or something. Yeah. She did, you know, Carrie did a lot of gambling.
She did. So they all head to Club Chaos, which we were not, I don't remember the last time I went to a club.
Girl.
Early 30s, we were not clubbing.
Sure we were together.
I'm sure. And it was not at a club, though.
No. Wait
a
minute.
It was at a club. I was like,
Wait a minute. You've gone to the Red Room, the Romba Room, the what's that place in Queens, that black-owned place in Queens?
Everybody yes. I'm trying to keep it under wraps. I'm not telling nobody.
Girl, it's over wraps. Everybody's
I know.
There.
It's all
Everyone
over the
is
place
there.
Now. I know. It sucks. That's less of a, that's more like a lounge feel than like a club, I guess. You can dance, but you can also like reserve a table. Yeah. But yeah, seeing them club, and I was like, Miranda, her business suit after God. Work at the club.
She was the definition of what we're talking about as millennials. Mm-hmm. We were in blazers at the club.
I know. Business casual, straight up. Oh my God. But Miranda like tears Skipper apart.
Oh my God, so badly. Everything he does, she can't win. He can't win. Poor thing.
But of course, by the end of the night, they're like making out. He's like in love with her. Carrie runs into Kurt, who basically flat out asks her to be fuck buddies.
Yeah. Formally. And,
like formally. Like this, that was nice. Let's do that more. And she's like, wait, what? Like now she's feeling icky about it. And she's like, if I was really having sex like a man, why don't I feel like I'm in control?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like she was like trying to, with doing this, she was like trying to take agency. But as soon as the man was like, yeah, sounds good, let's do it, she's like, wait a second, what? No, yeah. Now I don't feel like I'm in control anymore. Yes. Now it's what he wants to. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he like asked me formally, like he drew the boundary before I did.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Samantha's there. Samantha spots Big across the room, calls him the next Donald Trump.
Damn, that didn't age well at all. Damn, that man can't even sit in court without farting and falling asleep. You heard about that? God.
No.
You don't.
What? That's okay. Real. I don't want to know, actually. I'm good. Oh my God. But yeah, she says Samantha has deluded self-confidence.
Yeah, Samantha was the epitome of delusion.
Very much.
Actually, Charlotte too. They had that in common.
Charlotte was very delusional. Absolutely. Yeah. But we see Samantha kind of, you know, shimmies up to Big and throws herself at him, comes on very heavy, offers to give him a private tour of the club. Oof. And he turns her down very heavy, like hard bodies, like, I'm good. Charlotte, meanwhile, is out on a date with some eligible bachelor.
Do you remember this? Because I watched part of this episode of Crunch, and I was like, oh my God, the eligible bachelor. Like the eligible bachelor, like, list.
Yes, yes.
You remember this, right? Apparently, this was only in New York. I was like, didn't you guys have this in D.C.? He was like, no.
There used to be so many, I don't even remember the name of these websites, but these websites that talk about like New York City social lights or whatever. People that I have no idea where they are today, or they're irrelevant now because we're in the world of like influencers, basically. But yeah, you knew the who's who of young New York. And
like they Tinsley.
Tinsley Mortimer. Yep. Knew about Miss Tinsley way back in the day. Yep. So yeah, that's funny hearing them like bring that up, because this is that time, socialite time,
where she could have like found him in the New York Observer. Oh my God, what a time, man!
What a time.
Jesus.
Didn't I don't know if they still do this. I don't know if it was Time Out magazine or Village Voice, one of them. They would do like a list of like top. They too would do it.
Oh,
but then you could reach out to them.
What?
Yeah, you could like reach. It wasn't like socialites. It was just like regular New Yorkers that were like good looking, I guess.
Yeah.
But you could like reach out to them. Like they always had like an email address or something.
What?
I remember this. Yeah. I wonder if they still do that, actually. I think it was Time Out. I wonder if it was Time Out New York.
Yeah, that sounds like Time Out. I love Time Out.
Right? Yeah, me too.
Now there's Raya.
Now there's just apps. Yeah. Just, you can. Or Instagram.
Yeah.
So Charlotte was out with her, some eligible bachelor. This was the one fashion moment, I think, of the whole episode.
Lived for this dress. Beautiful. This is great.
It was low back. It had like an iridescent kind of like tone to it, color to it. But anyways, Charlotte is, you know, trying to be demure, trying to be like, you know, play the hard to get thing, and tells him she, you know, she's not putting out tonight. And he decides to put her in a cab, send her home. Everything seems well until he hops in the cab.
Yeah. And heads to chaos.
It flat out tells her, I got to find sex tonight. So I'm heading down to chaos.
I really got to have sex tonight. What?
This
we also need to talk to a man about, because what do you mean you really need to have sex tonight?
Isn't that what porn and
That's what porn is for, man. What are you talking about?
It seems like so much effort to hop into a cab, go downtown, open up your laptop, and get to work. This is so messy.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
So much. It's so much effort and it's so much ego stroking that you need to have. And apparently you need to have it tonight.
Yeah.
I have to know more about this designer. I don't know anything about this.
Same. So he goes to Chaos and picks up Samantha. So.
Yep.
There's that. They both get their needs met. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Carrie leaves the club. She's trying to hail a cab. Can you remember the last time you hailed a cab?
Yes, I do. 2016. You do? I remember. That was the last time I hailed a cab.
Wow.
Because I had paint. I was going to paint my room in my apartment.
And go back to your apartment.
Mm-hmm.
I can't even remember. I have no idea. Yeah. I feel like I've been riding Ubers forever, but no, there was a time we were hailing fucking cabs.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, she can't get a cab, and here comes Big in his town car, his driver, and he's gonna give her a ride home to her little Upper East Side apartment. So during the car ride, they chat, and Big really sucks from the beginning.
Oh my God.
This conversation was so condescending.
Yes. Yes.
It's terrible.
He came like he knew everything about her already.
So she tells him she's a writer. She's talking about her current research, having sex like a man, and, you know, or having sex and not feeling anything afterwards. And he's like, you know, I'm not like that or whatever he said.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, really? What? What do you mean? And he goes, you know, basically, you don't understand because you've never been in love.
You've never been in love. And she was like, from then, she was entranced. By then, I was like, are you, my notes are nuts. I was like, how the fuck do you know?
Like, right.
My notes are crazy. But the fact that he just put that on her and he knew that it would manipulate her for the rest of her life. This man who picked her up on the way home when she couldn't get a ride in her leopard bustier told her, you've never been in love. And she was like, damn, I haven't. Oh, my God. And Kurt went with somebody else. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I couldn't even tell Kurt that I love him. God damn. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah. This kind of left her on that, like, cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
And his famous line at the end. She said, "How have you been in love?" And he says, "Abso-fucking-lutely."
Oh, and they bring that back. A lot.
Yeah, they do. He says it a lot, I feel like.
I kind of love.
It's iconic. We'll take it. And yeah, that was the pilot episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So let's discuss this question.
Yeah.
Which we've rephrased. Why are so many single women ready and serious about a commitment and so many single men unserious and not ready for a commitment?
Mm-hmm.
So I put this up on Instagram and y'all were going...
Oh my God. You guys love this question as well. Yeah. Y'all
clearly over there mulling it over as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, a lot of people wrote a version of women have higher standards and deserve better and would just rather be single.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people said women don't need men anymore and men refuse to learn how to be wanted. I think great women really hold out for a great man, but great men aren't as particular.
That's
interesting.
Catching when his light is on. Yeah. Miranda quote. Yeah.
Someone said all single men have avoidant attachment.
All of them. Oh. Oh man.
Women are single by choice. Men aren't. The good men are all in relationships. Us women are socialized to be emotionally intelligent and men aren't. Men aren't as socially intelligent. They're still wrapped up in hookup culture.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time in history where women aren't dependent on men for survival.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is what Samantha said in the episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been that way for a while now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I feel like this is really one of the, like, ultimate questions. I feel like in my like, close circle of friends, I have a world-class surgeon. I have an Olympic athlete. I have this bilingual certified bat D.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I have another friend who's like the sweetest, most fun, most independent woman. Yes. Like men say, I want an independent woman. She is that to the T.
Mm-hmm.
All great single women who want to be married, but can't seem to find somebody solid.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the same in your, are you surrounded by a lot of single girls?
No.
Mix? Yeah.
No, what's your vote? I'm not. I'm surrounded by mostly people who are in relationships now.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And yeah, it just feels like there's, at least the sentiment that I hear from the single woman is there's this obvious imbalance, right?
Yes.
And this feeling like all the good ones are taken and what's left is just the scraps.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is this phenomenon? What is this?
I think it can be boiled down to a lot of things, but I think a lot of women, in order to attain all of those statuses, had to take some time to do it. Mm-hmm. And it takes some real concentration to do it. You can't be no world-class surgeon and not sit down and work, you know? And same with being an Olympic athlete. And because also we're talking about mostly Black women as well, we still have to work twice as hard to get half as much. That's still a thing. Mm-hmm. We're still out here, not just getting distracted by like the work we have to do, but it's also the emotional labor that you have to do while you're doing the work is like not easy. And so in that, you could find yourself feeling like you have to turn off your love life because something's got to go. In order to achieve these goals, something's got to sit down and take a back seat. And I know I felt that when we were first starting the podcast. And I was working at my 9-to-5. I was moving back in with my parents. I was like, I can't date anybody right now. Like, there's no fucking way. And I was celibate for 3 years. But it was something that I had to do in order to really concentrate myself and build myself up to be the person I wanted to be in a relationship with, you know, even to stand myself. And men in that, right, you're taking time, right? So that's on the women. But in that, men usually don't take that time.
They're just on a different trajectory.
Yeah, they're very willing to be distracted by women. They're very willing to be distracted by sex. And so in that, they don't do the same work that women do on themselves. So by the time we're all on the same playing field and we're 31 to 40, they're just not in the same place.
I wouldn't say the same playing field. At the time, when we're at the same age, we're in totally different planes.
Emotionally, which is all you need in a relationship. So,
we've like missed each other.
I
was thinking about what one of the guys that Carrie had interviewed earlier had said. How men by their 30s have all the power is what he said. I don't know if they have all the power. I do think men have a lot of power still. To your point, I think by the time we're in our 30s, men and women have just totally different priorities. And I'm talking heterosexual. I'm talking generalizing, obviously. I'm not talking all men and women. But I think a lot of women are dating with intention by their early 30s, right? Our clock is ticking, whether that's your biological clock or whether that's your clock of feeling like, oh my God, I need to find somebody because everybody else is around me getting married. And we're very focused on what we want. We're very focused on looking for somebody serious. Like we're dating with a lot of intention to find a life partner. And we're seeking that same level of focus and seriousness in a man. However, we're met with a lot of unserious men because their intentions and priorities are just totally different. They don't feel that pressure of the clock. It doesn't exist for them, really. And they're more laissez-faire, just kind of letting things unfold as they may because they have that privilege too. And I think a lot of men in their 30s, which I definitely remember hearing when I was dating, not even in my early 20s, are very hyper-focused on career and money and building their worth, their net worth, and feeling stable financially. And I think companionship is like nice for them, but they're not necessarily on that same hunt for a life partner in the way that we are. And they don't have that ticking clock. So a lot of men are just dating, we would say, without intention. They're dating to date.
Do you think that men who are looking for, or men who are focused on that kind of financial aspect of their lives are simply intimidated by somebody who they can join with and then create that, whatever that goal is for themselves? They simply just can't handle it. It's not them bringing it to the table.
I think that is an issue for definitely some men.
Some.
Yep. Mm-hmm. For some men. And I think Miranda, somebody said it also, like the idea men are threatened by successful women.
Mm-hmm.
And as we said time and time again, we're at a time in history where women are the most powerful, we're making the most money, we're more educated than ever. And I do think, yeah, there are some men out there who are definitely intimidated by mm-hmm. a woman's success. And I think to be intimidated by a woman's success means you feel small, right? Standing next to her.
Mm-hmm.
And as a man, you only know how to feel large through your money.
Right, right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So you can't even, it's like hard for them, those men, it's hard for them to even compute being with somebody who's their equal or makes as much money as them.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't fully blame men for that. Because this is how they've been socialized.
Exactly. Yeah, the patriarchy's ruined everything.
Yeah. This is how the patriarchy has affected them. Mm-hmm. They've been socialized to be providers, to be the breadwinner. So when a woman does make her own, it's not shocking that you feel emasculated.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's not shocking because men equate their masculinity and measure their worth with money and accolades.
Right.
So, yeah. What do you think?
That? And how many of those men who we're talking about were raised by women who never worked?
That too. Yeah.
They might have never even seen it in their home.
Exactly.
And so they really feel like somebody's stepping out of bounds.
Mm-hmm.
When they are making more money than them, mm-hmm. or they have more ambitious career goals than them, mm-hmm. and I feel like it's too much. Like you're doing too much, or like you are masculine, as we hear Miss Patty Stanger talk about in the New York season of Millionaire Matchmaker.
Yeah,
as if women don't have to pay rent,
right? As if we have our own bills to pay for. If we can't find a man to pay them, like. that's why Charlotte had me fucked up when she was like, just keep your mouth shut and play by the rules. Because I'm like, for me, that's just code for dim your light and let the man be the man. You're being too masculine.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
you got to play by the rules. You know what it is. Men are fragile in that way. So let them, you know, feel like they're big and tall. But it's like, why do I have to do like, that doesn't feel fair to me. What the fuck?
Yeah, right. Especially when women have so many opportunities now to stand big and tall.
Yeah. And we fought for this.
Yeah.
So now that we got here, we got to dim back down. Like,
well, yeah, because we fought for the wrong thing. But that's a whole other conversation. That's a whole other episode.
Oh.
But because, you know, like, we'll fight to work, but not fight for equal pay. What? Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Baby steps. We figuring this shit out.
I know.
We're trying to fight for our own rights.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Do you remember the episode or episodes, I should say? I will remember this for the rest of my life, of Oprah saying, let him open the pickle jar. Do you remember this? Please write in, comment, please, if you remember Oprah saying.
Oh.
Always let him open the pickle jar. That was the one thing, because she never talked about her relationship, right? She was very good about never letting Stedman out anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But she always said, let the man be the man. And that was her way of phrasing it. Let him open the jar and just like sit back. Even if you can't open the jar, have him like let him do it.
Yeah.
I still have trouble with this in my own personal relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Like last week. It got so bad.
I know. It's hard.
So bad. It's so hard because not only was I independent for 3 years living on my own in my own apartment, whatever the fuck. We went to an all-girls school. I'm third generation all-girls school.
Yeah.
We do it on our, like, I was raised in a matriarchal home, even though I had a dad or have a dad. And, you know, they're still married and everything. I was raised in a home raised in a family where the women don't back down.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like still a thing.
Yeah. And it's, we're talking out of both sides of our mouth, right? It's like, women, go after your dreams, you know, go to all-girls school. We're taught to be leaders and empowered and use our voice and chase a life outside of the household, right?
Right.
That's we're trying to break away from 1950s. We've made it. We can go do things. But then when we achieve that success, it's like, you know, but don't intimidate the man. Like,
right.
Still let him be him.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what? Like, you just told me and taught me how to do all these other things to empower myself. Mm-hmm. But then to keep a man or to get a man, we have to somehow still play into their fragility, like the fragility of their masculinity.
Yeah.
It all hinges on...
I know.
that man feeling large, and he can only feel large if he feels like he's in power, and if he feels like he's making the money, and he feels like he's the leader. And if we're doing too much, then we're being masculine, and we're going to not get a man and not keep a man. Like, that is exhausting to try to toggle between. Like, I can't do both.
I know. And nobody taught men a different way of life. As we were teaching all these girls and all these women still do about being independent, we still don't teach men how to react to all these women who are being raised to be independent. It's just, it's a cycle.
Yeah. It's a lot of bending and like shape shifting we're having to do. But as women are more educated than ever, making more money, more in the workplace than ever, men aren't yet being taught or even talked about how to adapt to this new society. You know, it's not the 1950s. We have a female vice president. Like, things are very different.
Yeah, we got a first husband.
Yeah. Things are very different. But the conversation is always on us to not do something or not or change something.
Yeah.
Where's the conversation about them and what they need to change and do?
Yeah. See what I was talking about earlier? We were fighting for the wrong shit. But
anyways. We're trying. So we're just trying out here.
I know.
Trying to fight for our own rights. We're trying to be able to... get this maternity, like so many things that we're still trying to fight for. It's all ass backwards, but yeah. I think another reason there could be a lot of, as we're, this phenomenon, a lot of successful single women, is what some of the listeners are saying, that women don't want to settle. And the more successful you become, your standards start to raise.
Oh my God, because the better your life gets.
The more money you make, the more educated you become, the more you're very naturally, I think, your standards also start to raise of the type of man that what your equal looks like, you know?
Right. And do you think, too, adding to your life, because the more things you do by yourself that you discover you enjoy, the more unappealing sharing those experiences with someone who may impede on those experiences. I'm talking a lot about travel. I'm thinking a lot about like when you are first able as a woman to pay for your own trip and travel by yourself, you're like, oh, you really got to step it up.
Yeah.
You travel by yourself. You bring your rose and your little whatever the fuck app, whatever you got going. Man, like, it just seems like it starts to get like ridiculous. Like if somebody's not adding to what you're
And you've become you've become accustomed to a lifestyle that you've provided for yourself.
For yourself. Yep.
So you're looking for someone to just be able to like slot on in rather than now I got to take care of him, you know, or I got to, you know, I got to think, oh, damn, he doesn't. I mean, so this is a whole other thing. Like the whole, you know, women wanting their equal, even like financially. If I'm making $200,000 a year. And I've been conditioned to be looking for a man to take care of me, because that's all we've been, that's how we've been socialized, is find a man who can take care of you. It makes total sense that those women are looking for their equal in that sense. You know what I mean?
And those women, to be a woman making $200,000 a year, you had to fight. Okay.
To get to that.
You had to really fight. So if you meet a man and they're not making it, you're like, what's your lazy ass doing? You know what I'm saying?
That's like, what you're thinking.
If you're looking in for a specific type of man in a corporate environment or whatever the case is, and he's not doing better than you, you're like, how could that be possible? Because I had to fight so hard to get where I'm at. That's what I would think. If I was one of those, if I was looking for financial equality specifically, that's what would be my mindset.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I achieved this. What's, and you, you're a man. You have everything laid out for you. What's your story? Do you, because I feel like we talked about this with the Ebony K.
Yes. The Williams bus driver.
The bus driver thing. And you've talked about in that conversation, you've been okay with the idea of dating a blue collar man.
Oh yeah.
And that's not anything that you had to like re-socialize yourself to be like, that was like not an issue for you. Do you ever think that some women some these like successful, high achieving, whatever, single women are getting in their own way by defining success by how much money a man makes and what degrees he has?
I do think so, because success could mean stability and not constantly climbing up.
Okay.
You know, blue collar work is stable work.
Yeah.
It's great work. It can create, if you, especially depending on where you come from and the family that you come from, it could create generational wealth for you. If your career is something where, you know, you can get laid off and in one day your life is over. Mm-hmm. If you date somebody who's in a union,
that money's long as wrong.
That money's long. So I think those women, I think, probably need to take a look at things like ambition and things like stability and concepts rather than just numbers.
I totally hear that. And I think it's very similar to what I was saying before, where, like, I don't blame men who, they've been socialized to, like, be the breadwinner. So when a woman comes in with more money and they're emasculated, it's like, how could we be surprised? That's how they've been taught.
Right.
I think it's very similar for women in that sense, that we've been, like, trained to look and seek a partner.
Oh, a provider.
A provider who makes more than us, who can provide for the family, who's the main breadwinner, who's the main, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so when we're told, you know, like Ayanna was saying, just marry the garbage man, it's like, in theory, we know the garbage man is very well could be a good guy.
Can have provision. Yes.
Yeah, we in theory know this, but it brings up other questions that we've not been socialized or taught to really understand, when the whole message we always got is find a man to take care of you. So our big question is, with the garbage man, can he take care of me? Will I be the breadwinner? How will I feel about that? How will he feel about that? And it's just a lot. Just really makes you think how we've been socialized differently, how society's actually shaking out, and how we're needing to have to, like, adapt, and how hard it is for us to adapt. Oof, Lord. It's hard out here for everybody.
I know. We're all adjusting, right, to the fall of the patriarchy. It's not easy. It's not an easy thing that we've not signed up for, but we're here doing this podcast.
Yeah. Exactly. Another question I have for you. Have you ever thought how women today, I think somebody also put this in the question box, women today are putting up with way less than our mothers and our grandmothers did?
Oh, my God. I need to interview more mothers and grandmothers.
Okay.
I need to know more about this story, because I know for grandmothers, for sure, because they couldn't even get a bank account without a man. So definitely.
Neither could our mothers.
I know.
That went into effect in 1974.
74, I know.
That a woman could get a bank account.
My mom was like 12.
Okay, well, my mama. She was in her early 20s.
What was I saying? Oh, yeah. So I need to, like, talk with more moms about that. People who are making decisions around that time, around that 1974 time. And let's bring it to 1984, right? Like, let's be real, right? Because if one day it changes, this is America, right?
Yeah.
So I need to talk to more women who are making decisions to marry around that time period, because I do not know. And I cannot say that for sure. Grandmothers, we know that. That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, with grandmothers and, parents, debatable. Everybody's parents are between 50s and 70, like between 50 and 70, I guess.
Yeah.
I feel like our grandmothers, like those women, they literally needed a provider.
Survival.
For survival. And so because of that, they were probably more open to putting up with nonsense, which could range from like different forms of abuse to, you know, a man who maybe ticks all the boxes and that he can, like, provide, but emotionally wasn't really there for you, you know? But what was most important then was, like, I need a provider for me and these kids. Now we can open bank accounts now. We can do a lot now.
People can be gay.
Yeah.
Women can be lesbians now.
Lesbians fully get married.
And, like, get married.
It's very different. We can pretty much do everything. Not everything, but we can do a lot on our own. And we get a lot of value from female friendships in ways. Mm-hmm. We talked about sex toys. We figure out our needs without a literal penis.
Yeah.
So the question is like, then why would I put up with a man who isn't there for me
who financially
or emotionally or doesn't add? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially if I don't need his money. I need his emotional support.
Mm-hmm.
But then he's not, he's like not even really be able to give it to me then. Then yeah, I'm going to choose to be single instead.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even in the 1980s, right, what was happening to the black nuclear family in the 1980s was pretty destructive. Mm. What they were doing with welfare programs, what they were doing was putting a lot of black men in jail at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically, right, to like really break down the black family, I think has plagued black men's view of black women specifically and their femininity for so long. And it's a really sad one. It's a really, really sad story that, or not even story, it's a sad like journey that black women have been on for so long. And black women have worked for so long. Women of color have worked forever without the ability to survive either, right?
Are you saying in terms of the men's perspective of change, because women were the man, they were the mother and the father in a lot of homes. They were playing, having to lean into more of their masculine quote unquote energy because the man wasn't around because he was in jail or either, you know, insert whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those, all those people raise people. So now we have people who are, they have these crazy opinions and really a lot of intense biases due to all this political intrigue that happened in the 1980s, which is really, really upsetting.
Yeah. Yeah. I do want to have more conversations with, our mothers, aunties, like that generation. So they're, what they were looking for in partners.
Yeah.
I do remember having, I remember two conversations with my mom. Shout out to my mom. She's listening to this. Like, I do have two, I remember two conversations I had where, this was more recent. I had a friend who broke up with a guy that she was dating for a period. I don't think they were official boyfriend and girlfriend, but, you know, dating. And she broke up with him specifically because she felt he lacked emotional intelligence. And she didn't feel emotionally supported by him. And just he didn't feel as mature emotionally. She's done a lot of work on herself and he just emotionally wasn't there and she's sure he was going to get there. And I remember telling my mom this and she was like, what? Why did she break why did she break up with him? And she's like, well, can't they work on that together? Can she teach him? And I was like, no, mom, like she, this is a deal breaker for her. This is something she's looking for somebody who's coming all the way buttoned up in this department. This is very important to her, emotional maturity. This is not something she's gonna like give on and they just work on it together. And that's a lot to ask of her. You know, I remember another back when I was dating and my number one thing I was always looking for, I was like, I need someone who can have a good conversation, who knows how to ask questions, who can carry a conversation, who's a good listener. I've talked about this before on this podcast. Like, that was my thing that I just could not find. And I could suss it out within 10 minutes in the first date. And I was like, where are all the men who know how to listen and ask a fucking question? And I remember telling my mom some of this frustration. And she was like, you know, maybe you're being too picky. Or maybe, you know, you're not giving them a chance. And again, I was like, this is a quality that's very important to me, though. This is like a fundamental for me.
I think it's a fundamental for life.
How it should be.
Conversation. Like, how many siblings do you have?
Two.
Not how many do I have, nigga? What are we doing with this conversation?
And I remember being so frustrated with her. I'm like, that's a, I don't think I'm being picky, mom. Like, no. This is something that is so fundamental to me and it's not on me. There's an issue. These men can't talk. Like, why aren't they listening? And so I feel like, I want to have more conversation with her or just like women of that generation as to like what they were looking for in a husband. I don't know what the qualities were. I don't know what, but ours feel very, to them, they feel very like,
too specific,
too personalized, yeah. And really we need to broaden. And there's more like general fundamentals that we need to make sure the man has, mm-hmm. and then the rest you can teach him.
Right.
What? Who said I want to do that?
Not me paying some lady to help me do that for myself.
Right.
I sit in the chair with my lady
every week
to yep. make sure all my feelings are straight and mm-hmm. narrow. My reactions are good. So, mm-hmm. no.
Why does that work on me to do?
Why yeah. am I dealing with anger management? No.
Yeah, no. But that's what I think it is. Like, there were like basics that they were like, we got the basics. The rest is fine.
Yep.
And we're like, we could provide the basics for ourselves. So I need these particulars, yes! my guy.
And I need you to go out and get them. I have the resources mm-hmm. to go together. You get them as well.
You get them as well. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Friend. What did we learn this episode?
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, I have a fun one.
Okay.
You can always, if it doesn't work out, just trade the dick. Just swap it around. These women this whole episode were swapping this dick all around New York City. Mm-hmm. Charlotte got with somebody, then passed him right to Samantha. Then Carrie's sitting at lunch. He's like, oh, he's too young for me, but maybe it'll work for Miranda. Like, just trade him around. Just that's exactly how you date in as a man. Mm. I think that was the dating like a man. Just shifting the dick all around. All around the friend group.
Yeah.
That was it.
Nice. What I learned, I feel like us women, we have more agency than we oftentimes remember.
Mm.
Because it does a lot of the times feel like we're at the whim of men. We're mm-hmm. ready. We're just waiting for them to just figure this shit out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Samantha reminded us that we still hold a lot of power. Our sex appeal is a big piece of our power that men cannot take away from us because mm-hmm. who owns our bodies? We do.
Yeah.
And I think this episode was just a reminder of that and a reminder that outside of looking for a husband, we do have needs and it's mm-hmm. okay to mm-hmm. go out and get those needs met. And those actions don't have to deter you from your path of finding a husband. You can do both mm-hmm. at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fine. Well, that was the pilot episode.
That was episode one. I can't wait for episode two, friend. We just touched the surface.
We did. Oh, we did. Man. Just skimmed the surface. We have a lot of little call outs, a lot of things we asked for you guys' perspectives, mm-hmm. opinions. We do not have all the answers. We mm-hmm. are just trying to figure it out as we watch this show as well.
Yes. We're talking about very big concepts and saying very sure things. Masculinity is this. Patriarchy is that. Like, we're saying a lot of like big mm-hmm. statements. You guys just like, you know, write in with your opinions, write in the comments on Patreon and join the conversation because we're not join saying the conversation. These absolutes as if they are fact. These are all our opinions.
it's just a conversation. Mm-hmm. So let us know your thoughts. Rate, review, subscribe. Join the Rose Garden on Patreon for bonus content, ad-free episodes, all that good stuff. And we'll see you guys next week.
Sure will. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.